Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the final session of the day. Thank you very much for coming along. We will hopefully make this fun, interesting, and get you out so you can have a decent dinner afterwards. See, lots of people have hot dogs. That's pretty cool. My name's Simon Brown. I'm a technical specialist in the data domain for Microsoft. This is session DBI 317, and it's titled Order from Chaos. And that is the wrong screen. There we go. So, what we're going to be talking about tonight is how we look at what you've got in your organization as unstructured data, structured data, and how we move between the two. So, to start with, let's have a talk about what unstructured data is. So, when I started to look into this, I did what most people do. I jumped on the internet and I started doing web searches. And as I searched, I tended to find what I was expecting was it was very hard to get two people to agree exactly what unstructured data was. Here are some of the things that I came up with. A generic label for describing any corporate information that is not in a database. So as a description, that will probably suit some things, but when you think about the amount of time that's being spent in the social domain, people looking at Twitter, looking at Facebook, that doesn't tend to be corporate data, but corporations are using it to try and get better insights into what their customers are doing. Information that it does or doesn't have predefined data model or organized in a predefined manner. That one's actually a lot better because it's sort of more encompassing the types of things that you have inside your organization. Unstructured data. Data does not reside in fixed locations. So, again, that depends on how you would define what fixed means. If you have two data centers and one of them fails and everything moves across, your data's just moved. Has it been fixed? You mean geographically fixed? You mean technologically fixed? And any data that has no identifiable structure. So, a lot of people talking about what they feel unstructured data is, and from that, I thought perhaps a better place to start was go back and have a look at what a definition of structure is. So I came across something that really resonated well with me. A guy named Duncan Pauly, who's the CTO of a data management company in the US called CopperEye, said he feels that there are at least three orthogonal aspects to what structure is. And the first one is how the data itself is structured. So we have some data. And it's how that data is put together. So from a DBA point of view, or from a traditional data management kind of world, we're probably talking about a schema. So how does the data relate to each other? How do we have constraints? How do we have rules? And how do we make sure that what the person who has put the data model together is going to be conveying that through to whoever is using it? The second aspect is the structure of the container that the data itself is in. Again, looking at those traditional views, it's probably the instance of a database. How do we make sure that we have an ACID compliant environment? How do we know that our transactions are actually going to do what we expect them to do? But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're in a database, right? So the structure of a container could be something like a file folder that has structure, if we define it to have structure. Then we might have a naming convention, it might have permission sets, it may have quota sizes, and the data that's inside it doesn't necessarily have to be structured itself. The third one is, how do we access the data? So this can be from a technology point of view, again, sort of more traditional concepts of an application or a spreadsheet or something that goes and touches that data. But moving away from that, it can also be about the processes. What is the process that I have to follow to be able to get the data that I need? And it might be, I fill in a form and I post it internally in the mail and I get back an envelope and I've got a piece of information. No technology at all, but a process for managing how we access our data. So why is unstructured data important? No talk's really good without a couple of quotes from Gartner, so here are mine. Unstructured data doubles every 3 months. That sounds like a lot. And 7 million web pages are added every day, which also sounds like a lot. Is that something that is useful to us? Potentially. 80% of business is conducted on unstructured information. Now, this one I paused on for a bit. I had to have a think about this, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought that that actually probably rings quite true. So somebody decides that they want to, somebody's working in, say, stock trading. They get an email through that says a company is going to be doubling in value over the next year and you should probably buy some stocks. Get on the phone, buy them. Was that a good decision? Possibly. They might really trust the person who sent them the information. But what if they also have stock data that says in the sector that this stock was trading, it's never doubled anywhere in the last 100 years? Or what if they found out that that stock itself had never been above 10 cents more than it was currently sitting at? Would it make you choose a different thing? Would you necessarily go ahead with the trade immediately? So this is something where we will be looking through is how do we take what was that piece of unstructured data and joining it to slightly better information or different information to get a better outcome. And the last one isn't Gartner, it's from the Butler Group. 85% of all data is held in an unstructured format. So we've been through our definitions of structured and unstructured. Really, I think what the takeaway from this, though, is structured is what your organisation defines to be important to be able to do business. Unstructured are the things that perhaps haven't had that rigour put around them. They're not currently sitting in traditionally what would be a database, or they're not falling underneath a process that says the structure of this says when A happens, B then has to occur afterwards. And this is where we're heading into, that for all of those other pieces of information, occasionally we might need them. Occasionally they might be tactical. They may have to become strategic. And how do we use them tactically and move them into strategic? So, what are we working with tonight? There are a number of technologies that we're going to talk about as we try and harness the processes around structured and unstructured data. In the unstructured space, we're going to be talking about Excel and files and internet data. In the semi-structured space, which is where we start to move things into not full rigidity, but a level of user-based fluidity, SharePoint, Excel services, Service Manager. On the far side, we've got our structured data of SQL Server 2012, analysis services, and integration services. And then across all of those three, we'll pull things together with the BI stack, SharePoint, Power Pivot, Power View, and hung together through the BI semantic model. What we're not going to talk about tonight is Hadoop. So, let's start off with a story. A couple of stories, a couple of demos. Meet Bob. Bob's a sales manager. He's a sales manager in Scotland, and he's got some stores that he needs to work out inventory for coming up to the Christmas period. So he's been looking on the internet, and he's seen a piece of information that concerns him for the area that he's in control of for his retail work. He looks after PCs and tablets and mobile phones. The information that he's come across says that PCs are in decline, and tablets and phones are on the uptake. And that's fine, but he wants to try and use that information that he's found to manage what his inventory is going to look like for his purchasing period coming up to Christmas. So, he has a number of business requirements here, one of which is he wants to create his report quickly. It's the start of December, he needs to order his inventory and get it in store. He needs to turn his personal information, what he's found on a website, and he wants to join that with his corporate data to turn it into BI. He wants to use his outcome to do his immediate purchasing plan. And then afterwards, he's going to discard it. No longer relevant. The Christmas period is done. And he's made his decisions. So let's have a look at how Bob would do that. So to start with, let's have a look at the article. So this is from April this year. And this is PC Tablet Review, quoting Gartner. 116 million tablets shipped last year, growing to 197 million this year. And PCs, from 350 million down a bit to 339 million. So Bob's been working with data a bit, and he's just popped that into a notepad file. He's given it some nice headers, category, last year, this year, comma separated. So for this company, cell phones is the category that they use for all tablet phone devices, and computers are the traditional PCs. So fires up Excel, goes across to Power Pivot, and starts to get some of this data through. So let's get data from our corporate data source. So the retail stores take the information and they roll it into the corporate warehouse. The corporate warehouse has analytics cubes that come off the top of that, and Bob has access to this. So we will hook up to our analysis services cube. And when I was setting this up, I knew making it called multidimensional was going to really be a problem. That's all right, I spelt it. There's our retail database. Okay. Now, we're going to have a look through the cube and have a look at what those sales figures, the actual sales figures were from last year. So the things that we're interested in are having a look at our sales amount and our sales quantity. But we're only interested in Bob's stores, and let's just make that a bit bigger. So in geography, we're only interested in Bob's stuff. He's in Scotland, which I think is in Europe, in the UK, and there we go. And under there, we can confirm those two stores that Bob has. We're only interested in last Christmas. So we'll move our date field up into here, and we'll say 2012 in Q4 in December, and we're only interested in putting it in for those days leading up to Christmas. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. And we're interested in the product. So we have a product category, and for that product, we're only interested in Bob's domain of those two areas there. We just want to be sure that we've got the right stores. Turns our data, and there we go. So pull that out of the analytics cube. Great corporate data source. And Power Pivot works that as we build the semantic model, so what we're doing is modeling, and it will pull the data up out of those data sources and allow us to work with the data encapsulated in what's become an analysis services cube sitting on the desktop. So the other thing we need then to work with, our other data source, is our text file. Which we're saying is a comma-separated file. And there's the data that we had in there. And let's join those two things together. So we now have the two tabs in here. This is our category. That's our store. And we have our sales amount and our sales quantity. So to be able to get a prediction on how many devices we're going to need in store coming up for the period, we're going to have a look and see what the percentage change here is. So if anybody has had a look at this, there's a full rich language that comes with this called DAX, which is incredibly powerful for working with these tabular analytic models. In this case, we're going to do a percentage difference. Looks looks about right. We're going to call that percentage difference. And let's make it a percentage, right? So that looks backwards. That's all right. We'll stick that there for the moment. So we've got a 51% change in the estimated delivery on that mobile market and a drop of 3% in the PC market. So what are we going to do with that number? So firstly, we'll make sure that we've got a relationship between these two tables coming from our structured data source and our unstructured data source. And we will put in a couple of calculations here. So in this case, I'm particularly interested in my sales quantities. And I'm going to say, bring me back the related field from over here that I've calculated as my percentage difference. And what's that going to do to my quantity? So sales quantity and last year's quantity by that percentage. Okay, so what we've done here is built a fully formed BI semantic model and the cube that sits behind it. With that data now, pull it back into a pivot table, and we can start to work with the data and see by category, by store, what were last year's amounts, and what are the predicted amounts that I might want to go and purchase before I get up to the Christmas period. Okay. Any questions on that?
No.
All right. So, what we did, we took our unstructured data source and we joined it to our structured data source. Bob has done his personal reporting piece and he's ordered the right number of PCs. He's happy with how the reporting's gone. And we identified this as tactical data. Now, this is something really, really important. Data and data models are an asset, just like hardware, just like software, and there should be some sense around the life cycling of these things. In some cases, it makes sense to keep your data forever, put it in a warehouse, be able to look at things back through time. In the case of this, for a decision that he really needed to make quickly and will never have to make again, he's able to. Puts it on his desktop, does the piece of work, away he goes. How did we do it? So, Excel and a file share with a text file in it, some data that we found on the internet. We used the corporate analysis services structured model, and we used our BI semantic model to do the joining of those two things, which then brought it back into Excel to do our calculations. So, success. Bob's had a great Christmas. He's heading off to Fiji. That makes him happy. So we'll leave Bob for the moment and we'll move on to Sally. Sally is not in Scotland. Sally's in Australia. And she works in the public sector and she's looking at hospital growth. So one of the things that she needs to do for an upcoming meeting is have a look at how she's going to plan or put forward a proposal for planning where investment goes in public hospitals. So building infrastructure like that is a long-term investment and there are a number of things that she needs to consider. Her business requirements here will include, firstly, she needs to be prepared and ready for her meeting, good to go. She needs to understand what the current state of the hospitals in the state looks like. So what's placed where and are they public or are they private? She needs to have a look at what the future state looks like. So she needs some idea of where population is going to grow over an amount of time. And she needs to then know what she's going to do next. So that's what she's going to take to her, bring the information to her meeting to then work out what next steps look like. Let's have a look at some hospital growth. So again, save that, we'll pop into Excel. Sally's already done some work on this. She's been having a look at how the hospitals are split via what we've got over here, Victoria's statistical geographic regions, and that gives her a little bit of information. The model that she's put together pulls data from a number of structured data sources. At this point, though, this is probably what I would call semi-structured. So she's got data from structured data sources. She's able to join these things together, and she's able to make a corporate kind of decision based on these things that may have long-term effects. So our data model will come up. All right. And here are some of the things that she's looking at. So we've got some joining tables in there, but the main ones to look at are here. We have some information about the current state of where a hospital sit. We have some ATO data talking about personal salaries and what is particularly key for this, who holds private health cover. And over here in the model, we've got population growth information for the next 20 years. Right. So the first thing we do with this now is go and save it into SharePoint in our BI gallery. So this is something that was added to SharePoint in 2010, and it's available in SharePoint 2013 with a couple of additions that makes it fantastic for mapping. So we'll have a look at that. We'll move into our BI gallery. So the file that I just saved up, we'll see here, hospitals. Now there are three things that we can do with this, all the things in this gallery, one of which is open them up as an Excel spreadsheet. The second one is refresh our data. So the data sources that made up the data model before are going back to different databases sitting in that environment. Being able to set up a schedule for this allows us to say we want the data refreshed every day or every half hour or whatever to give us a level of currency around what our reporting's doing. But what we're using for this is PowerView. So PowerView is a rich visualization tool. This is the SharePoint 2013 implementation. It also comes as an insert in Excel 2013, and you can do things through your spreadsheets as well. So the first thing we're going to do is have a look at our current state of hospitals. We'll put in some geography information, which we can quickly turn into a nice map. And what we're interested in seeing here is the split between public and private. So, current state of hospitals. Okay. So, that's a good place to start. The next thing to see is, of those hospitals, where do they sit in the statistical geographic locations currently? So we will have a look at, by hospital postcode, the statistical divisions and where they sit. So let me just drag that out. If I can find the corner. There we go. Can everybody see that okay? Right, so this allows us to see that the colours show us which the geographic regions are, and the points are currently the number of hospitals that are available. Doesn't matter whether they're public or private in this case. We're able to put in the statistical subdivision name as a slicer here, which are just the names of the suburbs, the statistical subdivisions there. And we were able to drill through them to really drill into the data and see what we've got. So we know where these are. We now need to have a quick look and see what the population growth is going to look like for Victoria. So we will go to our population data and grab these over time. Might help if we have a new sheet to do it on. Here we go. So, over time, there we go. That's the estimate. So, that doesn't really give us much because Melbourne is so far out of whack with all of the rural centres for how the population currently sits and where it's going to grow. But Melbourne's probably not where we want to be looking either. So let's put that statistical subdivision into our filter area here. And we can, if we can read it, take out Melbourne. We'll put them all in except Melbourne. Okay, so that gives us a slightly more interesting graph to have a look at. So you can see the ones down the bottom, regardless of where they start off, are all fairly flat. But the two up the top seem to be growing quite a bit over the next 20 years. So what we'll have a look at then is what are these two? And the first one, that's very hard to see, isn't it? Barwon and Goulburn, thank you very much. So those are the two that we're going to focus on as we move into our next thing, which is Medicare, public health cover. So for this, we'll have a quick look and just see where, in our ATO data, there. The number of individuals, the number of people with private health cover, and the places that they live that we're looking at. We're going to put that into a graph, and we're going to make that a 100% cluster graph. Okay. So what we're able to do by that is directly compare from a percentage change how exactly the number of individuals versus the number of people with private health cover compares against those statistical regions that we've got. There are only two statistical regions that we were interested in, so we'll put them back in as a slicer. We might actually just change the font on that. There we go. Goulburn, Barwon, done. So from those two regions, we could see back in our graph there we go. So So this is the Barwon area, this is the Goulburn area. And coming through to here, we can see that the number of private health people holding private health cover in Goulburn is a lot less than Barwon. So as we're looking through our planning for what we're going to be doing in the future, Goulburn is possibly the place that we were going to be looking at prioritising spending our money. So once the graphs have finished going in, we will save this. And our hospital plan has now been saved into that report gallery we were looking at before. Now that we've finished it, we can also save that off into PowerPoint, and we can use this as the basis for the meeting. So start with this, add in the slides explaining what the story is doing. And take it to the meeting knowing that what we've put into our presentation is exactly from the data sources that we've been looking at. And there we go. That's our PowerPoint presentation there. So with all of these things, as they embed into the PowerPoint presentation, you see you also get this interact button down here. And if you particularly in your presentation wanted to start working through the graph, zooming in, choosing the filters like we did, you're able to do that directly out of PowerPoint as well. So, what we did, we took our structured data out of our structured data sources and we combined it in a semantic model. We created what for us is sitting on our desktop as a personal data source, but then we popped it into the SharePoint BI library and used that as a data source that we could create our report off. Because it's in SharePoint, it uses standard SharePoint permissioning, so you can grant access to people, to the gallery, or to things that you create, and you can use that as a way of having control around what you're delivering. And we used our reports for a basis of a planning presentation by exporting them into Excel, into PowerPoint. And these are the tools that we use to do it. So again, in our unstructured space, we have Excel and our internet data. In the semi-structured, SharePoint and Excel services. And in our structured space, SQL and analysis services in the tabular model mode, which underpins the BI gallery. From the business intelligence side, we use pretty much everything that time around. So Sally's got what she needs. She's had a successful meeting, and she's decided to fly off to Fiji as well. Because she's in Australia, she flies. So, finally, meet Simon. Does he look familiar? So, he just bought a house, and being a hardcore user of data, he's built himself a little data warehouse of all the sales of houses around him, so he can feel good about his purchase, and also know that he has a bailout strategy if he needs to. So, he's got this data that he is building in his data warehouse, which he wants to keep for other users. He's got a requirement to think that he's made a good purchase. And he needs to understand that if he needs to go somewhere, let's have a look at the agents that he needs to be able to do it. So let's have a quick look at this. So we'll go back into the BI gallery here. And what we have here is a number of reports that are already put together in PowerView. So what we're going to look at here is something that's already predefined in terms of what we want for our outcome. The data will then be dynamic. So this is all built off a Power Pivot model that is coming off the data warehouse that has this data included. So this is the area around this nice lake here. Three surrounding suburbs. And these are the sales that have happened in the 3 months since the purchase. We have the average price per month, which has come off the model there. And also in the model, we've put in a calculation that allows us to have KPIs. So each suburb tracks the average month. The calculation has been put into the KPI model, which is the same as multidimensional models. It's just built into the tabular model and will come through directly out of Power Pivot into either a PowerView report or into Excel. And we're able to interact with this and see, you know what, I want to have a look at that agent and see which things he sold. And that will drill down into that and show you specifically what has been sold by the agent. And then we have an idea of average price per suburb, which also we can drill through, and sales by geography per agent. So I'm thinking at this point, should I ever need to sell? These guys are probably the ones who are selling more than anybody else. And I might want to stay away from those guys. I mean, Simon, whoever the guy is. we're also able to have a look at these suburb by suburb view. All right, but how do we get our data updated? Let's have a look at some web data. So again, this is just some information that gets updated every week. The local sales authority does that. And we're going to take that data and we're going to have a look in Excel at Power Query. So Power Query allows us to look at a whole bunch of information in a lot of ways from an online search, and the online search is actually quite cool. There are a number of places that provide data that will come up in the online search in a standard format at the moment. Most of them actually come from Wikipedia. If we said GDP per country, that'll do. We can see we get a list of data points here, which we're then able to pull back. That will go through these predefined table data sources and bring them back for us to work through. Comes back looking like that. And it gives us this new filtering and shaping tool, which is sort of the underpinning part of Power Query. Now, in this case, GDP isn't really going to affect people buying houses in my area, so we'll delete that. But what I will do is use Power Query to get something from the web. And you can see here there's all the other data sources, databases, file sources that you would expect. So we'll pull back that data page, and it's found that looking through the HTML, there's one table in there and the standard document information. Let's have a look at the table and see what information we've got in there. So we don't need that in there. So what we're going to do is use our first row as headers. Coming across to here, we probably need to have the suburb in there. So we'll say insert column of 1. And that will possibly do us for this. So what you see over here on the side are the steps that I am doing as I go and transform my data. At any point, if I've decided I've done something wrong, it's non-destructive, you're able to step back through and see exactly what you've done. And at any point, you can delete a step and then go back to doing it. Something that people who work with data all the time will love is you can automatically unpivot columns. So if you've got spreadsheets and people have put their data across, you click the button and it all magically just works. So we've got our non-awarding data there, and I probably also want to get one more. We're going to get Power Query, and we're going to pull from the web surrounding suburb of Blackburn. So what we're able to do with this data once it's pulled down, and we've got multiple data sources, and it's table 0, and we don't have headers, and we're going to put the name of the suburb in. So there's a full language in here as well for being able to manipulate the data we've got in the columns. There is, if you have a look in the help here, Power Query Formulas, 120-page document explaining how all of the formulas work and what they do. In this case, I'm just putting in some text. And we'll call that Blackburn. And you can keep on doing this with all these data sources. So this is just a way of cleansing and shaping and getting some standardization. Before we go and pull it into anywhere, we might want to join those two data sources together. There we go, done, happy, and I'm going to call that my sales data. So, or maybe even my house data. So over here on the side, you can see that all of the data that we've worked with here can be loaded into the data model, and because of all of these things are chained together now, anything that we change anywhere through that will flow all the way through into our data model. So let's save that off, and we're going to put it into our SharePoint document library, and I'm going to call that house sales. Fourth of the 9th, 2013. So we've taken our unstructured data, we've moved it into SharePoint, which I'm quite comfortable calling semi-structured data. There is a nice container there which structures it for us, but the data itself probably is still slightly freeform. And I want to get that through into my data warehouse, which is where our ETL processes come in. So we're going to create a new project. We're going to create a new SSIS project. And because Excel Services allows us to serve up these documents via a URL, all of these things immediately become a consumable data source. So in our library here, there's the new file that I just put in. There's the URL for it. And in my data, I put in data flow task, put in my data source. Say I want that to be okay. See, this gives us an HTTP URL here and allows us to browse through our SharePoint library. Go into our documents. All right, don't let me into my documents. All right, let me try that again. It's late, the demo wants to go home. All right. So the idea, and we'll talk through it, is being able to put that into there and being able to use that as your data source and SQL Server as your data destination. Run the SSIS job and it will just flow on through. So that should allow us then to go away, take our unstructured data and make sure that we have a repeatable process by which we take the data and we move it through that semi-structured and into a structured world. All right. So what we did, we took that data from the internet and we transformed it into a data set. We don't want it to be a personal data source, it's a consumable data source, so we did that by putting it into Excel Services. We used ETL to transform it, I promise we did. And we used Power View to visualize that data and keep that standard reporting that we've defined that we want ongoingly, but dynamic because the data will change. And going back to what our tool set was, we used a little bit of everything for that to get it from end to end. So, we've talked a little bit about the chaos that can be in the data that we use day to day and how we try and harness that to get better business decisions. Let's have a talk about what total chaos can be. I have heard this a few times, both in my career at Microsoft and before I joined here, that we have too much Excel. We don't know what to do with it. We have so many spreadsheets that we need to get Excel out of the organization. That is probably a natural reaction when you've got something that you can't control. But what we have here, if you've got too many spreadsheets, is more likely to be a process problem than it is a technology problem. The tool is there, and if the tool gets taken away, another tool will just come along to replace it because there's obviously a business need if these things are happening. However, what do we do about getting some level of control and putting some order around this chaos of data? Luckily, there are a number of things that we can do to try and help make this easier, one of which is discovery. So SharePoint 2013 has an audit and control management system, which allows you to take a lot of that data and work out whether it's low or medium risk, where exactly it should be, who exactly should have access to it. Our data sources, we saw that a data library is pretty much what you've got when you start loading data sources into a SharePoint library, and Excel services allows you to serve up that to be consumable. We've got over here in our data flow a for loop container, and basically that will let you go through all of the data that you've got in that published URL and keep making decisions about, do I keep it or do I not keep it? And change control. So we've taken these data files out of a personal space and put them into a corporate space, still managed by a person. At that point, if we've decided that's business critical and we want to give access to people so they can start using it, probably would make sense to give it a configuration item and put it under change control. Because if somebody's gone and built a warehouse based off your Excel spreadsheets and you change them and you break the warehouse load process, that's probably not a great thing. So this allows us to put that process in place of, I have important data, my important data can impact other people, and if somebody's going to change it, either upstream or downstream, let's put it through a change control process. The tool sits over the top and allows you to then start using some of these things as a little bit more than perhaps you're able to at the moment. So finally, what does overall success look like? We've got Bob, we've got Sally, they both jetted off somewhere on a holiday. Who knows if they end up in the same place, but at least if they do, we know they've got something to talk about because they both had successful BI stories. And with that, if anybody has any questions, I'm more than happy to take them. Yes?
Okay, so you, the last example, where you set up a spreadsheet that extracted its data from a table that was out on the website.
Yes.
Yes. Can you schedule that ETL tool to run every day and it will be there in the website for any updates?
Yes. So the question is, in the last example, where the ETL tool was supposed to hook up to the Excel services and load the data, can that be scheduled to work every day? SSIS, all of the packages are fully schedulable, either through the SQL Server agent, or there's a command line tool that will run it. So if you're using a different agent for doing your enterprise scheduling, you're able just to call the command line tool and run it like that. Yes?
Could we not have just loaded that data straight off the spreadsheet?
Yes, you could have loaded the data straight off the spreadsheet. Absolutely. So, as in having it as a personal spreadsheet? Sure.
Yeah, rather than putting it into SharePoint.
Yes. Yes, you can load it. So the ETL will definitely point... The Excel data provider that we've got there... Let me just pop back to that. So all that that expects is Excel. It doesn't matter whether it's in SharePoint or whether it's a file path.
2010 or 13 as your file, it'll work.
Yes.
The file extension is the problem.
No, when I double-clicked on the document library, it wouldn't actually open up the document library. It was my problem. Yeah. And I think that's because I've had so much stuff open, I've run out of memory, and I don't really want to reboot it now. So, so did that answer the question? So the point to this, the point to what we did wasn't so much about can you consume the spreadsheet from the desktop or from SharePoint, but if you need to put that process around it to make sure that what you're doing is repeatable, how would you do that? Now, if I'm a user and I've got it on my desktop, is my enterprise server going to have access to my desktop? Probably not. That's right, yes. The questions, yes. Yep. So the question is, as we do data flows, how do we track our data lineage? There are a number of data lineage tools available in the marketplace. At the moment, there is no data lineage built in as a tool directly into that. Yes?
Because you don't control that source, it's outside of our control.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so the question is, if you're consuming data that's coming from a website and somebody changes the data, is there a way of tracking that? The structure of the data, yep. Okay, so last week as I was working through this, everything was working just fine with pulling my data down from that RAIV web page. I came to look at this on Friday, and sometime during the week, they've changed it to a login password thing, and it was completely open previously, and I went, oh, I have a real problem. The answer, as with all of these things, is the web will change. So you either need to have monitoring and alerting around these processes. If they're mission critical and you have to have your data, you need to think about what your SLA can be if somebody goes and changes the web page on you. Web page scraping is great. We've got a lot of tools around that. There are a lot of ways of consuming your HTML and turning it into something. If your organization relies on it, a paid service will give you notification that they're going to change things beforehand generally, and you have a service level associated with what you're trying to do. Monitoring, alerting will come through, and you should have that on any process that you depend upon anyway. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, is there a way for us to somehow connect all of those things just to have them all good so we know what our data is, or we actually have to migrate them? So the question is, do we just link to them, or do we actually have to go through a migration process for them to be centrally managed and shared?
Okay. The question is, if we've got a large number of access databases, do we have to link back to those databases as raw access, or is there a way of moving them into SharePoint to have a centrally managed way of having these together? Is that right? Great. SharePoint 2013 comes with a number of apps, one of which is called Access Applications. Access Applications works, as far as I understand, and I'm no expert, it takes access databases that you point to and it will move them into a SQL Server. It will control what happens inside the SQL Server. It moves everything that's in a table out of that into SharePoint lists for the querying stuff, and the SQL Server database controlled by SharePoint for that. If you want to do things differently to that, there are a number of ways to skin a cat, and I'm more than happy to come have a chat to you about it if you'd like to come and see me in the showcase tomorrow. Anybody else? Yes. Sorry, what was the first one? Scheduling the refresh?
Yes, scheduling the refresh of the data. So, I mean, you can say schedule every hour or something. Is there any way to schedule that through an external scheduler?
Is there any way of scheduling the refresh of your Power Pivot data through an external scheduler? That's an awesome question. I have no idea. So, as I can think of a number of workarounds immediately, you can set the refresh in the library, and that will, you can either do that, let me go back to my document library. So these things have Power Pivot models in them as well, and through that you get the Power Pivot data refresh, right? Possibly. If there's an API that will let you do it, then yes, you can do it through scripting it, right? I'm not entirely sure that there is. Why don't you come see me tomorrow in the showcase? I'll write it down and I'll get back to you. I'll take your email address. Somebody at the back, yes. 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 How do they know? Yes.
This thing that has happened with the user.
Yep.
And then we took the file
Yes, it's possible. So you need to build your SSIS package to understand what happens with the data that it might be duplicated. What do you do if there is a schema change? And that would probably be a monitoring and alerting thing. Yes, it's all schedulable, but you then need to be careful when you're building your SSIS package that you cater for the differences. No?
The question is not about the SSIS package.
Yes?
The question is about the Excel file itself.
Yes? Yes.
I'm talking about that
frequency of pulling the data. So the pulling the data from the web is here. That's the manage Power Pivot data refresh. And that's where you can set. So let me click on that. And we'll just bring up the scheduler. That'll take a sec. While that's coming up, anything else? Yes. So there's a row-based security model that goes into tabular models. Give me one sec. I'll just quickly say this is what the refresh looks like. You're able to configure that in pretty much the standard way. This is a function of SharePoint. That's right. So if you want it refreshed every 15 minutes to pull that data from the web, that's what this will do. Right. Lost my train of thought, sorry. User row-based security. Now, Visual Studio is misbehaving on me, but I will just quickly say, let's create a new project. Let's go, we want an analysis services project. I want to import that from the Power Pivot model I've just created. No, I don't want to do that there. No, don't worry about that. So what we're able to do here then is, oh, I didn't set that up, that's good. Is take the Power Pivot model, which I'm obviously not going to be able to do now. Take the Power Pivot model, load it up, and manage and work through it in Visual Studio. And in Visual Studio, you've got your row-based security. You can set up partitioning. You've got control over how the X Velocity engine is doing its in-memory stuff. And you hit publish, and it will move the model into an infrastructure-based analysis services tabular model. So the idea here is where it says workplace server, that should be saying tabular model, and when you do your build, it will just push it through. So then you move it, as opposed to sitting in the SharePoint gallery where we were publishing our Excel spreadsheets, you actually take the model, put it into analysis services, and then that becomes a new analysis services cube. Anyone else? Yes?
What version of SSIS is that? It looks like SSIS 2012.
It is 2012, yes.
Yeah,
2013 is.
The interface looks different.
Okay, so, let me try opening it back up again. Visual Studio 2013 has two add-on packs to it. One is the SQL Server add-on pack, and the other one is the SQL Server BI add-on pack. This is the BI add-on pack that we're looking at, and this adds in the Power Pivot consume tabular model pieces. They're both free downloads off the Microsoft site, and you just install them with this. Anyone else? No? All right, cool. Thank you very much. Have a lovely evening. Appreciate it very much.